This is Peter Chung. I'm the creator of Aeon Flux, and I wrote the story for Isthmus Crypticus.
My name is Howard Baker. I was the director of this episode.
And I'm Japhet Asher, the executive producer of Aeon Flux.
I worked with this on this story with Todd French, a writer who actually had interviewed me for a magazine and who was a really big fan of the show when it had been on Liquid TV. And he said that he would like to try working with me on one of the episodes. We had tried in the first two episodes, Utopia Deuteranopia and The Demiurge, to work with established writers who had a lot of experience writing animation and television for the studios, and we found that they had a particular way of writing scripts and a way of storytelling which was very studio bound. And after those, from then on, we tried to find writers who were maybe not as experienced but who had just a freer approach to storytelling.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And the net result of that is that we often got things which were extremely unformed, but which had extremely unusual and original ideas, and stuff that we would never have we'd never have gotten because from standard writers, because they would have censored themselves.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And I remember Todd. I mean, this was the first thing that Todd had written that was produced, and his original draft was just filled with just the very bizarre kind of tangents, which I wish we could have stayed kept in a sense. There was even a sequence where there is a household of aliens living in one of these Breen tenements. They had a very tangential role in the story, but it was just such a wonderful kind of unexpected moment.
I remember he brought his story outline in. He typed on a typewriter still, and it was all like very dense, single spaced, wide page. They, you know, completely formatted the wrong way, and written like a short story, really, but with great images and ideas, and dialogue, which, you know, I mean, would be as if every speech from a character was the length of a major monologue in Shakespeare. People spoke in multiple paragraph chunks.
Yeah, he had a fondness for very long and obscure words.
But within all that were great things. So, you know, it was worth the effort to find.
Yeah, the idea of I'm pretty sure the idea of the bees in Ilbrin's
socks
was his idea, and the way he activates them with the sound device. His telescopic legs was my idea. The idea of these beautiful ethereal creatures who are irresistible and who offer bliss to whoever comes into contact with them was my idea, and the idea of Aeon's relationship with Una was my idea.
But Todd did have a lot of good ideas.
I provided the basic structure of this quest for these creatures. And as it happens, Una, who is Aeon's ally on this mission, happens to be on the same quest, and she doesn't realize it until halfway through the mission. And she realizes that Aeon's agenda and Una's agenda are at odds. And so, I'm getting ahead of the story, but...
What you guys were saying, that we had good opportunity to work with some interesting writers. I think the storyboard artists, too, that we were lucky enough to work with, most of them didn't come from backgrounds of doing lots of television shows, and so they tended to work a little bit differently also, and were a little bit more willing to try new things and
yeah, but it was, I remember it was hard on you as a director. It was hard on me as well, but because there was a lot of needing to kind of conform to what's going to work on the screen.
Film language,
yeah. Yeah, and actually, I do remember on this episode, for example, we had Paul Gulacy, a comic book artist whose work I really admired, who actually storyboarded the first act. And I think you ended up redoing it quite extensively.
But there was a great, there was something great to start with. You know, his staging and everything might have been a little bit more like a comic book and less like a filmic story, but he had great angles and things like that just to start with.
Over the years, a number of people have asked where the picture, who put the pigeon, the carrier pigeon, into flight with the picture on its leg. And the answer is that we really don't know. So, don't ask.
It's something that's not answered within the story, but we do get the sense that the information about the Seraph Trevs is leaking out. And that they're very desirable, and therefore that there would be someone who, on the inside, would be trying to disseminate the information.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, in the end, it's sort of about fate. Somebody recognizes that their predicament is one that needs changing, and
it could have even been Ilbrin, because he was so interested in the female Seraph Trev, wanting to put it out there that there was this male Seraph Trev trapped. Mm-hmm. That's just the could have been.
But really, it's one of those questions which, you know, is really not relevant to what the story is really about, which is whether Una gets the information about the Seraph Trev through a carrier pigeon or through, I don't know, a photograph printed in a book or whatever is really not the point. The pigeon was a good image because the Seraph Trevs are bird-like, and it creates a kind of how would I say it, microcosmic in miniature, kind of the relationship that she has to the Seraph Trevs, because the Seraph Trevs are like birds with clipped wings, and who are not allowed to take flight, and her sympathy for the bird will ultimately mirror, and you know, when in the end she does take flight, it's sort of the catharsis, you know,
And when she sees the bird later, it's when she actually makes the recognition. She recognizes that they're looking for the same exact thing.
Yes, yes.
And it's funny, this episode is kind of, it's more of Una's story than Eon Flux's story. She's the one who actually sort of changes and the world changes around her because of what happens, as opposed to Eon, who at the end just kind of goes, oh, well, you know, another day for me.
Well, I think it's, I mean, nonetheless, I think that Eon's agenda is very altruistic in this one, because her goal is to liberate these creatures who she sees as being unfairly being kept in captivity.
Well, and not to mention making love to the man that she would like to be
yes,
doing it
yes,
with.
And there is that jealousy motive.
You know, and Una sort of misinterprets what Eon's intentions are. Of course, there's also the relationship between Eon and Una.
Yes, it's hinted that it may go a little beyond just casual friendship.
Right, the way she caresses the leather jacket and the memory of something.
Yes, and
I think if... if it was for the style for the show, Una might have even had worked as even a little bit of a younger girl, just because I think of this as her. She grows up in this episode. She goes from being a silly schoolgirl to an actual woman.
Yes, who's willing to who's willing to, how shall I say it, break with her idol, who is Eon, the woman that she admires and wants to be like. In order to find her own way. I mean, up until this point, you kind of get the sense that she's wants to follow in Eon's footsteps, but then she realizes that she has her own desires and her own path.
Yeah, I really enjoyed writing for Una doing this episode. She's a very kind character.
Well, and she's very real.
Yeah.
Shirking responsibility, wanting everything that doesn't just come in front of her. When we originally designed this document she was reading, it was, if you remember, Peter, it was a map. And I think it was, we had kept it as a map for a pretty long time. And then one day we thought, it's kind of funny that Eon can't read a map. So we made it into a document.
Yeah, although I'm not sure. I mean, she was always a translator, even in the script, so that must have been a storyboard interpretation of the script. And this, again, I think is one of the better-looking episodes. Was animated in Korea, and I think some of the animators who worked on this episode actually were some of the same animators who worked on the Liquid TV shorts. And so they really understood the style. And I think the characters are drawn correctly for the most part. Why don't you
take them? I really like Narek too. I think when he takes his jacket off, he's a definite surprise. We've seen so many half-naked women on the show, and then all of a sudden this guy with a lot of skin showing is a bit of a surprise.
Although it is a bit mnemonican way.
And yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, we do have Clivius, actually, who's
right.
Pretty.
Yeah, and Onan.
Onan, yes.
But I think the other thing is, I mean, going all the way back to the kids in the street going after the bird, every time that we get these sort of bits of normal life, it really does create a great texture for these unusual stories. For me, it really feels it grounds them in a very special kind of way. That you're seeing very normal behavior, normal activity, in these extraordinary circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Una, haven't you translated my fish yet? You'll never get those slingshot leathers finished at this rate.
Here's our exit.
What?
So I can't remember if this was in the script like this, in quite this way.
I think so.
Was it? Because I just remember seeing so many different versions of the script. I sometimes forget which things were added in storyboard.
That was actually some Peter Gaffney stuff. Yeah.
I love the sequence of Trevor admiring himself dressed as a Seraph Trev, as though he believes he can be as beautiful. Just loving himself.
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorite moments in the series too.
Yeah, I think Jaffet wrote the dialogue. This is one of the prototypical Trevor lines coming up.
Go shoot yourself.
Yes, sir.
That's right. Kill the damn messenger.
Yeah, there are just occasional moments where you write a line and you realize that you've nailed something important about the character, and that was one of those little moments.
This little human moment too of someone forgetting where they put the key.
And again, Trevor so obsessed with something that somebody got the drop on him. I mean, not like Trevor.
All right, make this an impeccable rush job.
So here is Una. She's now wearing Eon's jacket and trying to be like an Eon Flux Jr. sort of. Really trusting in Eon enough that you know, whatever Ian is doing, she doesn't even know what Ian's mission is, and yet she's willing to go along and assist. Only went over Scalati briefly.
Did so on Cuba. And is still acting like a girl too, not you know, still has here Ian's, you know, reprimanding her and take the left down side. Taking the moment seriously, where Una is still not quite gone there emotionally.
I mean, the southeast corridor should plug into lower neglected person.
I mean passage.
How close are you to getting your degree?
Yeah, the animation here is very exceptional. This is actually, I think almost all of Act 3 was animated by a really talented Korean animator who actually learned to animate working on the first Liquid TV shorts with me. I gave him his first animation assignment. He's now very he's a well-known director in Korea, and someone I work with often.
Howard, this is the moment of revelation.
Una grows up.
Yeah.
And in a proper Monikan form, does it by pulling her gun and making her first kill. Which is what I always thought. This scene right here is just her really thinking, am I really gonna do this? This is really what I want.
I have some new coordinates for you. Yes, these are definitely the ones you need. Proceed as follows.
I don't think we actually made a real alphabet.
No.
Ian, Una here. You copy? You should be directly over the male Seraph Trev's chamber.
Can you see the fold-out stairs yet? Over?
I'm almost there.
Green light, go. Red light, stop. Green light, stop. Red light, go!
This is the big turning point.
Yeah, Ian has very sensitive ears. Plays a couple times.
Well, there was a question, and I don't even know if I should bring this up, but where these Seraph Trevs originally came from. Were they creatures that Trevor had found and captured, or were they, in fact, creatures that he had created? And we know that he creates life forms. It's one of his hobbies, as we see in the Habitat episode. I like the idea that this world that they inhabit, that these creatures could exist as just a natural parallel form of life.
He always was. The bird came to me, not you. He sent it.
When we were doing the shorts, there was the suggestion that the world that Ian inhabited was also inhabited by alien life forms, for example, and in the Demiurge, supernatural beings can also exist.
I couldn't have known we were on the same train.
So,
a Breen named Ilbrin offered me the female for
him. My own take on it is that they're natural creatures.
This creature is an agony.
Yeah, I think every episode I worked on had some sort of creature. The Demiurge, Isthmus Crypticus,
the Nargiles. Yeah, and
even what we thought were aliens in Sinister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously when you're doing an animated show, you want to take advantage of the fact that it's animation. So,
right.
So, yeah, and having, you know, I'm actually at a point where I don't enjoy animating human characters who are just straight humans.
Go to him.
And
take him away.
I tend to have a lot more fun with the non-human characters at this point, like in the Animatrix episode that I did, and Dark Fury, the aliens in that.
Yeah, I've always felt though that this business with the tragedy of the insects suggests that the male and female Seraph Trevs don't really can't they shouldn't mix.
Well, yes, we find out here that one of the reasons why they were being kept apart was that the male Seraph Trev is infected.
Or infested, yes.
Which we find out at the end. And that maybe Trevor's decision to keep them apart was not for his own selfish reasons, but perhaps to preserve the female.
Go to hell.
And
maybe, although there's also a sense
it's both.
Yeah, because he didn't want the female to fall in love with the male instead of going for...
Well, perhaps in the end it's a doomed race of creatures. They'll either kill each other or Trevor will put them apart and they'll never procreate. And as it is now, if there's another female out there, he's going to have to find her.
Yeah.
And poor Una is destined for some horrible death.
Well, yeah.